but it was a little bit of...
Hello?
David?
yes, we got this thing situated. I'm excited. This is our first anniversary show, but every once in a while we have a glitch. We got a lot of things going on. In our show, we have the one of the top congressional candidates running for a special election, Don Cashew. At the end of the show, we have Ryan, the webmaster blogger extraordinaire behind the Daily Kingfish, the leading source for political information in Louisiana. And also, I guess Tim's already alluded to it, but we have one of our favorite guest hosts, Bernita Smith, with us on the hour, and Catherine will come in later. Bernita, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I think Tim was trying to say that you had been working with the presidential campaign. And if you want to give us just a little recap of some things that happened on that.
I served as the state political director here in Georgia for the Hillary Clinton campaign, which was an exciting campaign. I think we had a lot of grassroots support, and we built a lot of support throughout in every congressional district, which was, it was definitely a lot of fun. I had a ball working on the campaign.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think this weekend's delegate selection just showed how much of our grassroots support was there. And I think everyone had a good time at the delegate selection across the state.
Yeah, so if you look at the political organizing end, I saw both headquarters, drove by both when they were functioning, went in the Hillary Clinton one, saw completely in the Obama one, saw the list of endorsers. If you really look at it, you know, the Clinton campaign was so well run, even though the results were not quite what you had hoped for in Georgia, it seemed like it was a more professionally run campaign.
It definitely was. I think we definitely had that edge. I mean, I don't think it was lined with expecting that there were going to be a lot of elected people to, you know, come out and endorse. But I think when you get the electeds that we had who actually worked and, you know, used their leverage and, you know, got behind us with their grassroots team, it turned out really good on that level, on organizing level.
Yes, and then, of course, the delegate selection throughout the state. I actually ran the 11th district, and first thing I want to do, I want to thank a lot of folks from Polk County. Representative Rick Crawford came up huge for us. Another group was going to run over in the meeting room we were originally supposed to be in. Rick Crawford got right with the city manager there at the Cedartown City Complex, got us a better room to have the delegate selection in with the same parking lot. We just had to move people, point people to a different building, and it was just awesome. And then, of course, a lot of folks, Regina Roberts, my vice chair, Harold Wingfield, Burleigh Morris, and the chair, Mason Brumby, were all there supporting us. So that helped to go real smoothly. But we elected three delegates. The Clinton delegates was one of Bernita's top helpers, Will Folks. He won in the male Clinton slot. And then in the two Obama slots, Don Wilson won for the male Obama slot, and Dina Womack won in the female Obama slot. And it was really strange. We had more candidates on the ballot not to appear than we did appear, which was very, very unusual, but then helped us have a 30-minute process. So I think we may have had the quickest of anywhere. But, Bernita, you were in the fifth. Tell us about the fifth.
I think the fifth was awesome because Paige Gleason and Will Curry did an amazing job with their team. And Catherine, and they had almost 1,200 people there.
Wow.
Because the Obama camp had 85 people running for five slots. And, I mean, they did it was just an amazingly well-run job. And you can expect the worst with so many people, but the Teamsters came out and helped them out a lot. And, you know, they just had a ton of good volunteers, especially the YDs came out and volunteered for them. And we elected our two grassroots leaders, Angela Trigg, who's our 5th Congressional District Captain, and Miguel, who staffed our office basically almost every day. And it was definitely, you can tell, the race was, the runner-ups were actually people who maxed out on the campaign compared to the winners who actually worked every day for the campaign. So it was definitely interesting, and I think everybody enjoyed their caucus experience in the 5th.
Yeah.
The Obama Obama went until like 7:30. We were done in the Clinton at like around 1 o'clock. So we were definitely happy to be in a smaller caucus. And across the state, I mean, we've had Beth Hann, who was a congressional district captain, won in the 9th, and Joe Diaz, who, you know, gave us his office space. They won in the 9th. Alice Pate, Muskogee County chair, won in the 2nd. Let's see, who else? Beth Carrera ran it, won in the 8th. And her caucus was like 10 minutes because her opponent didn't show up.
Yes, that's what we had with Don Wilson in the Obama caucus, which I actually ran so I could run both. We ran them together because we had a crowd a little under 100. But, yeah, he had no opponents. He was supposed to have four opponents. He had no opponents show up. It was really surprising.
Wow.
I did go ahead and get the district results from the 3rd. Some of the congressional chairs sent them to me. And
mm-hmm.
In the 3rd, which is a southern Atlanta area, the Mel Clinton slot went to Morris Stewart from Carolina.
Which is really good.
Cuyahoga County. The male Obama slot went to Kevin Madden. The females, two slots there, went to Aaron Glenn from Fayette County and Joanne Liceo.
Mm-hmm.
I said that name wrong.
Lasazio. Mm-hmm.
Lasazio's great helper down there in Harris County, just runs the Harris County Democratic Party. And then they had an alternate, Kevin Jones from Henry. So they had a good turnout of 300 people for a Republican-held district.
Yeah, in the 13th, our Clinton was Aaron Johnson, who works for John East in the Fulton County Chair's office. And in the 4th, we had Rhonda Peek, who was definitely a really hardworking volunteer. So that was really good. And let's see. What other count? What other district?
Yes, Aaron Johnson. I've worked with him for a while now. I believe Aaron and I worked on a 2000 campaign together for Roger Kahn, and I've known Aaron a while, and he is a very professional, dedicated worker, and that's good to hear. And that means he won't have to launch a project finding out how Republicans select their delegates.
Mm-hmm.
I know that project everybody's really interested in.
Yeah.
How Republicans select delegates.
That was really, really good. I mean, if you compare the Clinton delegates to the Obama delegates mostly are a lot of elected people in the metro area.
Yes, I mean, who were some of the elected officials that won and lost that you've heard about so far?
I heard Gail Davenport won in the 13th. Donvella James, former state senator, she is the alternate for Obama in the 13th, and Lee May, county commissioner. Won in the 4th congressional district for Obama. Al Williams in the 1st congressional district for Obama, and he won. And I think, well, the sentiment was that the hardest working folks in Obama campaign didn't really win.
Yes, because now Tommy Irvin ran for a seat.
Tommy Irvin didn't run.
He decided to only run at the state level.
Yeah, we encouraged all our electeds to only run at the state level.
Okay.
Because we wanted our grassroots supporters to have a chance to go to Denver.
Yes. What about people like Stephanie Bedingfield-Stuckey and
Dan? No, she lost. C.T. Martin, the councilman in the city of Atlanta, won, and his assistant Andrea Boone won in the 5th congressional.
Wow. So some sitting elected officials took losses. I guess Lester Jackson, I believe he ran. Did he win in the?
I don't know if he, that's the only district I don't have results from it is the 12th.
Yes. So you have the Obama side, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because everyone that was calling in told me who won on each side. Oh, and then one of the most surprising wins was in the 10th. Frank Williams beat out Lowell Greenbaum, who's the party chair.
I saw that.
Frank was our 10th congressional district captain for Clinton.
Well, and I guess if it was more about Clinton people winning, for that was a good thing. I will say that the delegation is going to be very different. I don't think you're going to have as many people that have been before. I think Lee May was actually my roommate last time of Austin, and we were both pages, so Lee will be there. Dina Womack won again, but you're going to have a lot of new faces, so that's good that more people get a chance to go. Now, of course, there are some experience things that are good to have, and hopefully they'll have they'll listen to the folks that have been there before when you need experience, if you will. So that was exciting. Well, I guess before Ryan comes on with us to talk to us about Louisiana politics, I did want to touch on Pennsylvania. Tim, what do you see on the polls and the blogs about the Pennsylvania race?
Okay, the conventional wisdom, David, is that it's holding steady at a mid to high single-digit lead for Senator Clinton. There was a couple of polls released this morning. I think they both showed Senator Clinton with five-point leads. Frankly, the state is made to order for her. It's a state she should win. Ohio and New Jersey, as you know, both border it. She won both of those states by 10 points. So the blogs, especially on the Hedgehog Report that I go to all the time, is just saying that 10% is the benchmark that this race will be measured by.
Yes, and that seems like it makes sense. Bernita, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with Tim. I think it's going to be 10 or more that she's going to win by.
Yes, and that definitely is going to be an infusion of energy into the race. So that's going to continue this race out for at least another week, if not longer.
A week? Are you kidding me? We're going to June 3rd.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, we're going to go at least past North Carolina on to...
We're going to the end. June 3rd, David.
That's what I'm saying. Kind of
trust me.
Take us to the calendar. I know North Carolina's next on May 3rd.
North Carolina and Indiana.
And Indiana. Then from there, where do we go?
Oh, let's see. Oh, yeah, we're taking this one all the way to the...
I think this is going to be a big momentum win to where if it's a split decision between Indiana and North Carolina, then you continue on further. So,
yeah, you have West Virginia.
That probably the Clinton victory.
Kentucky.
Clinton victory.
What is it? South Dakota? No. Hold on 1 second.
And if it's a caucus, that leans Obama.
Yeah.
So it's gonna.
We got Oregon.
Oregon. That.
We got Guam, Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is the last one.
Yeah, Puerto Rico's a...
Well, actually, no, South Dakota is the... it goes Pennsylvania, then Guam, then Indiana, North Carolina, West Virginia on May 13th. Kentucky and Oregon both have an election on May 20th. Puerto Rico, Montana, South Dakota.
Yeah.
And the only one that's a caucus is Guam. The
rest are... And Guam, being that that's in the Pacific... That would seem like that Obama would have a little edge up there just by geography.
Don't know about that, Dave.
I don't know the Guam political scene.
Well, for instance, I mean, what do you compare it to? Maybe Puerto Rico, which is another protectorate, but Senator Clinton's been running a 9 or 10 point lead there in Puerto
Rico. But one is more Hispanic and one is more Polynesian. And I would think that
would
help. I believe we have Ryan from the Daily Catfish in with us. Welcome, Ryan.
Kingfish,
I'm sorry. Kingfish. Ryan, you there with us?
Hi, this is Ryan McLeod.
Yes, Ryan, welcome. This is David McLaughlin. Tim Shiflett's on with us, and we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about Louisiana politics. So you're on with the dailykingfish.com. I'll turn it over to Tim.
Hey, Ryan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Just excellent. Let's get right into it. One of the best pickup opportunities for Democrats this year is in Louisiana 6. Tell us about that race and how it looks on the ground there in Louisiana, please, sir.
Well, the first thing I think y'all need to know is that Louisiana has changed the rules for federal races. Usually, in the past, there was a jungle primary where everybody would run against everybody, regardless of the party affiliation. That's no longer the case. The former Governor Blanco signed legislation last year that changed that. So now the federal races only, the Congress and the U.S. Senate, are now closed primaries, which I think helps Democrats because now there'll be folks are going to have to choose. I'm going to vote in the Democratic primary, or I'm not going to vote at all. So it engenders more of a Democratic affiliation. Second, in the 6th, former Congressman Richard Baker announced that he would resign from Congress back in January, and he actually resigned on February 6th. I know that the Republicans in the state were hoping for a short election season, which they thought would benefit them. So they called for the special election primary to be held on March 8th. Unfortunately for them, State Rep. Don Cashew had already declared that he was running regardless of whether or not he would face Congressman Baker in the fall. And he started raising money. And he's been very, very successful in raising money. I believe he raised over $260,000 for the special primary and the special runoff. A little bit about Don. He has been in the state legislature since 1999. Prior to that, he was a prosecutor in Pointe du Pays Parish, which is just northwest of Baton Rouge, and he never lost a trial. After he was elected to the state legislature, he successfully fought to enact tougher ethics legislation, crack down on sexual predators, and push for more investments in roads or schools. There was a very spirited primary on both sides, both Democratic and Republican, but I really thought that Don would make the runoff no matter what, as he was the only Democratic candidate that did not live in Baton Rouge. The district encompasses Baton Rouge, but it also has five other parishes, Pointe du Pays, East Feliciana, West Feliciana, East Baton Rouge, West Baton Rouge, and Ascension Parish. In the runoff, he faced off against State Rep. Michael Jackson of Baton Rouge, and he won 56-43. On the Republican side stands Woody Jenkins. This man is so far right-wing that he called for putting Social Security funds in the stock market during his failed Senate run against Mary Landrieu in 1996. Also during that campaign, he bought David Duke's mailing list and phone banked those folks, hoping to turn them out for him. He then tried to cover it up, only to sign an agreement admitting culpability with the Federal Elections Commission in 2002. Even more incredibly, one of his opponents in the primary, a gentleman by the name of Paul Sawyer, who used to be Congressman Baker's chief of staff, ran ads against him saying, "Hey, you bought David Duke's mailing list. What do you have to say about that?" Mr. Jenkins' response was to say that his opponents were lying. And he ran an ad saying, "You guys are lying. These are not true." Despite the fact that he paid a fine and he signed a piece of paper with the FEC that said, "Yeah, I covered this up. I accept responsibility."
Wow.
All that aside, it's going to be a fight. I mean, Don is running ads. He's also phone banking folks. They have folks door knocking, but so is Woody. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is also running an ad, and the National Republican Campaign Committee was also running an ad, but they just went dark. However, a group co-founded by Ari Fleischer called Freedom's Watch just went on the air with almost the exact same ad that the NRCC was running, using the exact same message, "Don is going to raise your taxes," even the same images. If you go to dailykingfish.com, you can read all about it. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has gone so far as to file a complaint with the FEC about it, saying these things are the same. It turns out that the guy that wrote the ad for Freedom's Watch used to work for the NRCC. He claims he took an old template from an ad from when he was at the NRCC and just used that. But I mean, they're using the same images. The message is almost exactly the same. They're even citing the same votes to claim that Don raised taxes. The idiocy of all that was that there are quite a few Republicans that voted for those. And current Congressman Rodney Alexander voted for that. So did the gentleman that's running in LIL-1, Steve Scalise. He voted for some of the same things. It's not a very effective ad. There's also a Baton Rouge contractor by the name of Wayne Rigsby, who has announced that he plans to make a third-party expenditure to run ads against Don because the unions are helping him out, are helping Don out with phone banking. He doesn't run a union shop at all. He does not employ union workers on his bills. I've heard rumors that he uses illegal immigrants. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea.
Wow. Now,
So it's a, it's,
so what do the polls look like there?
I'm sorry?
What do the polls look like in that race then?
The last poll that was released, it was, I will say that it was commissioned by Don. It was done by Angelo Lee. It shows that Don had 49-42. I think it gets more interesting when you get down to the cross, when you get down further into it. There's something called the generic ballot. You have a generic Republican versus a generic Democrat, and you say positive things about both of them, and you ask the voter who they're more likely to vote for. Historically, the Republicans have had the generic ballot advantage in this district. That generic ballot advantage is now gone.
Wow.
The generic Democrat is now favored over the generic Republican 43-42, which is, for all intents, a wash. So
wow.
It's going to take – so whoever wins is going to do so on the merits of their candidacy. And I really think that Don is well-positioned to win this because folks find him to be extremely likable. His favorable rating from the beginning of the campaign to now has actually risen 15 points.
Wow.
Woody's, on the other hand, has remained the same. People know who he is. They remember him from 1996. He runs a couple of weeklies here in the district, and he's just a very, very conservative Republican that, to the point that the so-called Main Street Republicans, the business Republicans, just don't like him.
Wow.
They just
now there's now there's another special election also in Louisiana to replace Governor Jim Dowell in his district. Could you give us a report on that race?
Sure. The Democrat in the First District of Louisiana is a woman by the name of Gilda. She's amazing. I'll give you a little bit about her life story. She contracted polio as a child and underwent like 17 surgeries to help her to walk. She now uses a walker to get around. She is also the mother of 7 children and the grandmother of 15. She has Democrats in her family. She's got a couple of Republicans in there as well. I believe she has 2 kids that are currently serving in the military. Her husband also served in the Navy. While she was raising her kids, she decided, I want to go to school and get my degree. So from like the late 80s, to the mid-90s, she went and got her BA, her master's, and her PhD, all the while she was helping raise her kids. She now is a psychology professor at the University of New Orleans and is considered to be one of the best professors by the students. She had actually decided to run against Bobby Jindal before he was elected governor. And she put over 30,000 miles on a minivan traversing the district, which includes the North Shore, which is directly across from New Orleans, separated by Lake Pontchartrain, and Jefferson and St. Charles Parish, which are directly west of New Orleans. Historically, the seat has been a stepping stone for Republicans to move up. If you remember back during the Clinton years, Bob Livingston represented the seat, and he decided to resign when it came out that he was having an affair. After that, David Bitter took over, and before long, he was off to run for the Senate and was elected in 2004. Then Bobby Jindal took over that seat after his failed run for governor in 2003 against Governor Blanco, and he decided after a term and a half, I'm going to run for governor, and he won. So, in essence, this district has not had a representative fighting for them in over 10 years because they've always been moving on. They've always been looking to move up.
Wow.
Gilda, on the other hand, is not going to do that. She has pledged that she's not going to run for another seat. She's going to stay and fight for the people of Louisiana 1, many of whom are still struggling to put their lives back together in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. On the Republican side stands State Senator Steve Scalise. He served in the state house and the state rep for quite a while, even going so far as to switch seats last fall during the legislative races and run for the state senate. One of his opponent for that race, the state senate district is very, very Republican. So it basically was two Republicans running against each other. And his opponent said, look, you know that if Bobby Jindal wins the governorship, you know that Steve is going to up and run for Congress. You just know that. He tried to run in 2004, and he was persuaded by the powers that be in the Louisiana Republican Party to step aside for Bobby. And then when Bobby moved on, they would back him. And he reacted very angrily to that, saying it's not true. There's no evidence to that. And lo and behold, he's now the Republican nominee for the congressional seat.
Wow.
In Louisiana one.
Well, speaking of Jindal, his name has popped up on the short list for vice president for Senator McCain. Is there anything to that, or is that just a rumor?
Honestly, it doesn't surprise me. Governor Jindal, for all intents and purposes, is one of the very few rising stars that the National Republican Party can point to. He has had no major scandal that have yet come to light, and he's unfortunately very, very well-liked here in Louisiana. Could he be chosen? Possibly. I mean, he has yet to finish a job that he's taken on. I mean, he was appointed to work for Governor Foster and had the Health and Human Services Department under Governor Foster in the mid-1990s, and then he was off to Washington to go do something up there with President Bush, and then he decided he was going to up and run for governor in 2003 at the age of 35. I mean, I can't think of any other state where somebody at the age of 35 is considered to be a serious candidate for governor. But the Republicans just pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. As far as whether he will accept, I don't know. I think one of the reasons why he decided to run for governor is because it was rumored, and I put credence in these rumors, that his wife, Supriya, really didn't like the fact that he was never home. I mean, she's a fine lady. She's a great first lady for Louisiana. And she, from what I hear, loved living in Baton Rouge, where her family is close by. So I think the decision may be up to her whether she wants to move up to Washington. I have no idea.
Okay, well, what is his popularity level looking like in Louisiana right now?
There was a recent poll that showed him with a 77% approval rate.
Whoa, that is high.
It's high. I suspect, however, that's because he's one of the few politicians that has delivered on his promises during the campaign. He said he was going to pass ethics legislation that was going to be the so-called gold standard. And he largely succeeded, though. I think there's a big flaw in the ethics legislation because there's no campaign finance limit. I mean, corporations are allowed to give money in our races down here. You're allowed to give up to $5,000. And many of Governor Jindal's supporters have evaded that limit because they have a number of limited liability corporations. And the rule is, an LLC or a corporation can get $5,000. So one of his supporters, a gentleman by the name of Boise Bollinger, has four different LLCs. The man himself gave $5,000. I believe his wife gave $5,000. And each one of his four LLCs gave $5,000. So one person directed $30,000 of campaign contributions to Governor Jindal.
Huh.
Now, it's on both sides. Democrats do that. Republicans do that.
Wow.
And I really think that ethics legislation, the campaign finance needed to be done, but for whatever reason, the political will is just not there.
I see. Another politician I want to talk about while we have you on is Senator Landrieu. Now, she was earlier listed as possibly the best GOP takeover opportunity in the Senate this year, but now I've seen recent polls that show that she has a pretty good size lead. Is she in any danger? Could you tell us about that?
She has hit the magic 50% number in the polls, which if you're an incumbent politician, you want to make sure you're above 50, because that is when you're considered safe. She does have a $3 million cash-on-hand advantage, over her Republican opponent, John Neely Kennedy, no relation to the Kennedys of Massachusetts. But at the same time, I mean, her nickname is Landslide Landro because she always has close elections. I mean, she won her last race by 2% in a runoff in 2002. In 1996, it went to a runoff, and she barely eked it out as well. The interesting thing I find about the polls are the December Survey USA poll. I agree it's dated, but it's the only poll that I can find that shows the whether folks know them or not, know who the candidates are. And 56% of the state was either neutral or had no impression of John Kennedy. And I find that incredible because he has been on the ballot four times in the last 8 years, running for state treasurer and running for the U.S. Senate as a Democrat in 2004. He was recruited by Karl Rove and the National Republicans to switch parties, which he did just before the statewide elections last fall for state offices, in which he successfully ran for re-election as treasurer.
Wow. Do you think then, Ryan, that this race is going to wind up close?
I think this one's going to be close. I really think it's going to be close. Whether it's 1% or 2%, I don't know. But when 56% of the state doesn't have an impression of you or is neutral about you, I think there's room for that to grow closer. And Mary, she just annoys a lot of Democrats. There are quite a few of the more progressive Democrats in this state who just hate the fact that she always, always skews to the center. And they're like, look, you can run as an economic populist in this state, and you can win. And she just, for whatever reason, she just doesn't do that. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Regarding the cash on hand advantage, that's going to evaporate as well because President Bush is actually coming to town on Tuesday to raise money for senatorial candidate John Kennedy.
Wow.
And that fundraiser is expected to net north of $1 million for Mr. Kennedy's campaign. I think, as usual, it's going to be a tooth and nail fight. I think she'll win, but Democrats are going to have to work for that one.
All right. I want to ask you one more question before I turn it back over to David, and it's about the voters themselves. You know, Hurricane Katrina was supposed to have displaced enough Democratic voters to make elections tough for Democrats, you know, all over the state of Louisiana. But results and the polls are currently not showing this. What are you seeing in the state about that? Is it going to be tough for Democrats there this year?
In the congressional races, it's going to be tough, but I think here in LA06, Don can very easily win. I think if he wins on March 3rd, I think he's going to be representing Congress for a long time to come. I mean, it's very rare that you'll have somebody win a race, a special election, and then lose the regular election 6 or 7 months later. I can't even recall an instance in where that has happened. When it comes to the statewide races, that's where it gets a little interesting. I mean, Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita, which hit southwest Louisiana, has displaced Democratic voters. There's no question about that. In the governor's election last fall, the Democratic turnout in New Orleans was terrible. I think it was less than 30%. Part of that, however, was due to the fact that the organizations that normally get folks out, Congressman Jefferson's group and two rival organizations, really didn't have a dog in the race. Part of that's due to the fact that the issues of New Orleans were not part of the campaign narrative, as Governor Jindal didn't want to antagonize his backers in the insurance industry. I will note that he used to work for the McKinsey and Company, which advised Allstate to change the way they did business and adopt a much tougher stance when it comes to their clients' claims. In other words, they and they took them up on this. They now lowball the claim, and if the claim is accepted, great. If it's not, then they're going to fight them in court. Another issue that comes into play is that the Democrats failed to get behind one of the candidates, so folks just didn't bother going to vote. Bottom line, in New Orleans, there are lost Democrats. It's still a Democratic town, but less so. In a statewide race, the candidates may feel they have to screw more to the center than usual because they can't rely on the huge Democratic vote of New Orleans anymore, which is why I think you see Senator Ladd Rowe spewing more to the center than normal. But I really think that she can win. I think it's a little bit tougher, but not overly so. In lower-level races, folks are Democrats. They're going to vote for a Democrat who is generally pro-life and pro-NRA, pro-gun. If you've got a Democrat like that, I think it's a better than even shot for a Democrat to win in this state.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. David, are you with us?
Yes. Ryan, thank you for calling in. You're so knowledgeable, but I just wanted you to let everybody leave everybody can.
Not a problem.
How they can get and read your blog every day.
Well, thank you very much. I've been trying to do as much as I could to get more notice out there because the local papers here don't do a very good job.
Yes, well, thanks for being on, and so they can read you at dailykingfish.com.
All right, well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
Yes, well, Ryan is so knowledgeable. Vernita, I believe you met him at the Daily Kos convention in Chicago. Is that correct?
Yep, we were in the same group at Daily Kos this year.
Yes, that's and you can tell Ryan does that. I mean, I think his blog kind of came out of nowhere. There was a lot of older media-type internet sources for politics, and then now, in just the last few months to year, if you want to see something about New Orleans, or I'm sorry, Louisiana, you look to Ryan's blog, The Daily Kingfish. I think Catherine came on in. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you. I'm finally here. Sorry I was late tonight.
Well, I mean, like I said, when we got up to 7:15, we were going to let Ryan inform us, and he did. So
Very interesting.
Yes, and we got Don Cashew calling in the next, a little less than 10 minutes, so we're going to have to give Don full attention with that exciting race. But until then, Catherine, you were helping with the 5th. We talked a little bit about it, but what were your impressions of the delegate selection?
It was very exciting. A lot of great Democrats came out. You know, we haven't had a full count, but we think there were about 1,100 people there. And for the most part, we had no real problems. We had a few cranky Democrats, but, you know, what do you expect when you have that many? And, you know, good showing for both the Clinton and the Obama caucus. It was really a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. I got there at 7:30 yesterday morning, and I drove out of the parking lot at 7:30 last evening. It was really quite encouraging. A lot of enthusiasm, of course, and it was fun. It was great. Bernita was there. She was very helpful, and I was the chair of the Clinton caucus, and we had a good showing there, and we were fortunate to elect two really good delegates to that. I wish I could tell you the names of all the people who won on the Obama side, but I really did not take notes. I was pretty tired by then.
Yes, and so you were there 12 hours?
Yes.
Wow, that was quite a longer day than I had. I was just telling everybody earlier, our process, if you count 12 o'clock when it started, we were done by 12:30. And that just had to do with the fact that some of our candidates didn't show up. But we still had a crowd of nearly 100 folks. But, you know, we were just able to, because some of our candidates just didn't show up. It just changed the complexion, everything.
Some of our candidates didn't show up either, but that was probably good because we had, you know, over 40 for the three Obama women delegates and over 40 for the two Obama male delegates. But I think only about half of them showed up to give speeches. So,
which is so strange that if you look at the paperwork you have to fill out, filling out all the paperwork and sending it in is probably more work than actually driving to the location and making a speech.
Well, except that it was, you know, 3 hours of speeches.
Yes, but if you're committed, and I mean, of course, if somebody just doesn't have the commitment to go and attend, I mean, then how are you going to elect them?
Well, I'm with you on that.
Yes, I mean, I tell you what, if I was, we had one gentleman who was the only one to show up, I told him later, I said, my speech would have been three words, I'll show up. maybe pick five, I'll show up in Denver. You know what I mean? But yes, so that we got in that process down. Now, of course, I'm hoping the party's able to turn their attention to recruiting candidates, and I know that we've still got some targeted districts to, get candidates for, but I will say this, I've heard recruiting's getting a little better, and we actually added, since we had our show, we've added a candidate in the 6th Congressional District, Bill Jones.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I believe we're down, we may be down to just the 3rd District not having a Democratic candidate, and I believe that Ernie has a candidate there at any time, so it may be that we once again do what we did 2 years ago and have a candidate in every race, which is a pretty good accomplishment, I think, for congressionally at least.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to flow that down to the state house and state senate levels. But yes, and then also just kind of following back up on what Ryan said, in some of the polls, there's both polls from Anzalone Group have Don Cashew leading, but then there were some other polls that came out. Swing State Project, they had a listing of all kind of polls, and some of those are Southern races, some are not, but they had Don Cashew at 7 and Don Cashew at 5-point leads in 2 different polls. They had Travis Childers, a former guest in Mississippi, with a 1-point lead. Which in that district, that is great. Last week we had Cheryl Sable, who was running in Alabama 2. Now, they actually polled Bobby Bright, who's the mayor of Montgomery, but he's the leading Democratic candidate conventional wisdom. He has leads of 5 against a Harry Ann Smith, who's a female state senator, and he has a 19-point lead over Jay Love. Don't know who Jay Love is, but he's in that Republican-held district. He's that far down. Then also there's another open Alabama seat, and it's going to be to fill Bud Kramer's seat, who's a Democrat. And in that race, Parker Griffin, the Democratic state senator from Huntsville, is leading by 16 points. So really the Democratic polls across the South are looking good. I could keep going. There's a North Carolina seat in which Robin Hayes, a sitting representative, is 2 points down to a teacher up there, Larry Kissel, who's running on the Democratic Party ticket. So this really may be just a tremendous takeover year for Democrats if we're leading in these kind of seats, I think.
Well, I was talking to someone yesterday at the caucus who was thinking about running. I can't remember what state rep seat it was. And I just thought, I told her, I said, well, if you want to run as a Democrat, this is the year to do it.
Yeah. Bernita,
in Georgia.
Yeah, anything you're hearing on some of these races?
I think there's someone's going to run in Cobb County and for a county commission race.
Yes.
I believe polls 4 as a Democrat, so that'll be a change up in Cobb.
A takeover opportunity. Also, mm-hmm. I know there's some takeover. I guess Rich Golick's seat, that seat's always on the target list. Pat Dooley's former seat, I guess Thunder Tumlin currently holds that seat, one of the strangest names on the ballot, somebody putting Thunder on there. But anyway, his seat's always targeted, so I know those are 2 target opportunities as well. It's Cobb's demographics shift a little more Democratic over time. And then, of course, there's always some seats in DeKalb. In Gwinnett, I believe there's George Wilson ran for a seat that's part in DeKalb, part in Rockdale. I believe that stays a target seat for us. So, and then, of course, in the South End, Bernita, you were showing me a work pack site where you can go on there and see how many Democrats are, what Dem performer percentage. Tell me the actual figure we were looking at there.
I do not know right now.
But we were looking at something where we saw these South Georgia seats where it appeared that Democrats there was a lot of Republican-held seats that had these huge Democratic performer percentages that would be take-back opportunities if we worked them the right way.
Yes, I agree. There was a lot where it was, seats where Republicans were unchallenged in 2006.
Yes, and so those are seats that I hope we can take advantage of. in the near future. But so that's another thing we can look forward to on future shows. North Carolina primary is coming up next week, and we're planning on having some North Carolina experts, if you will, come on for us. And, of course, as Georgia qualifies later this month, we're going to have to get back. And once all those races, we see where we're at with competitive races, which seats will be unfilled, we can look at that as well. Waiting for Don Casu to call in. I'm sure it'll be just the next little bit, but that's kind of what we end our show with this week. But
hey, David.
Yes,
can I throw up something for your consideration right quick? David Wissing has put up an Electoral College watch, and he bases it on the most recent polls in each state, and here are the totals. Clinton 278, McCain 60, McCain 290, Obama 248. Now let's have y'all's thoughts on that one.
Sounds good to me.
Well, either way, whichever Democratic nominee is, I hope they get over the 271. But that is interesting. Tim, which states are the changers, if you will, between the two maps?
Well, I'm going to click on that right now because Senator Clinton seems to be running better in the South, for starters. She runs better in Missouri. She wins that. Obama does not. She wins New Jersey. Obama is even. Latest polling in Ohio has her up 11. So it looks like she is stronger in the South and the upper Midwest, and she also wins the state of Virginia, and Obama does not.
Wow, in Virginia, that'd be the first time Democrats...
No, West Virginia.
West
Virginia.
Because I was like, Virginia, we haven't won that since like 64.
No. You don't look good this year either, but those are the areas where she seems to be running stronger. He seems to be running stronger in the red states, but losing them closer, shall we say, than she is.
Yes, and I think Florida's always been one that people kind of think she does better at.
She does run closer there, yeah.
Yes, and then I saw one map where she would lose the Pacific Northwest states, but he would win. I kind of think if we're losing the Pacific Northwest states, we're in trouble no matter what, so I just don't think a Democrat loses those states. Just like you see some crazy things where we're competitive in Kansas and you just have
that's
to
not true, it. David. I mean, the governor of Washington barely won. I mean, so I think, you know, when you're looking at, like, Washington State and Oregon, I mean, it's very hard for a Democrat to even win in there if we're not being competitive.
Yes, but I would assume that in this electoral map that either Democrat would win those two states.
Well, let me put it that way.
I don't think you can jump to that conclusion. I think there's a fair amount of sort of libertarian type conservatives in the Pacific Northwest.
I agree with Catherine.
They're not in Seattle and Portland.
In the eastern,
but
part of
they're
the
in the more rural parts of those two states.
Yes, we have a caller from the 404. Welcome, caller.
Hi, I'm Bob Hernan calling in.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good.
You were at the 4th Congressional Caucus, is that correct?
I used to be, and then I got redistricted into the 5th just by three streets. I'm three streets into the 5th.
I verified your registration yesterday, as a matter of fact, Mr. Herndon.
Yes, Bob, what you got on your mind?
I'm just calling to listen and hear what you all were thinking about the caucuses.
Well, we had reported some of the results, and they were just the attendance was just record-breaking. And then it seems like a lot of the delegation, there were a few surprises here and there, but it went rather smoothly. And, of course, folks that want to run still can run at the state level.
I thought the people did a good job. The early voting was an interesting thing. I think it was good because it got the busloads of people out, but the problem is nobody stuck around for the rest of the speakers, and I don't know what it's a little discouraging for people, but I don't know how to run a better system. Do you know what I mean?
I agree with you completely, Bob. I thought that as an organizer of that of the 5th Congressional Caucus, I was really thankful that we were able to move those people out. But I thought that for the candidates and for the process, it wasn't as valuable as it could have been. So, you know, it's always a balance on those things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the answer is. It's a strange thing, and I feel there's so many deserving people that need to go, and you know, two slots for 20 deserving guys is just a shame. You know what I mean? Or the, you know, three slots for 20 deserving women or 40 deserving women is just it's a shame.
Yes, well, it's actually we have more delegates than the Republicans have. I think we have twice as many delegates as the Republicans have just for regular folks. And
mm-hmm.
that means that our process is more inclusive. I know that without even doing my own project.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah.
Republicans. So I know that that's one good thing about the Democratic Party. Although I've been saying it and saying it, I think they should only have these conventions, at least ours. Republicans can have theirs where they want to. But Democratic conventions, I believe, should be held in cities with dome stadiums.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you had it, if you compare having a convention in Phillips Arena with 20,000 seats or the Georgia Dome with 75,000 seats counting floor seating, I mean, that's a tremendous number of extra folks you can have in there. And, of course, I know if that's the capacity for a football game, you have to make a stage.
You could even get more in for speakers.
Well, no, but you have to make a stage area. But still, you're going to more than double the amount of space you can have folks come to the convention. Now, that doesn't mean you can just open up to everybody, but you could have maybe not more delegates, but you could have some type of, maybe not an alternate, but maybe somehow like they could
visitors
could be doled out to Democratic activist visitors, more people could come.
I just don't get it.
I've never been to a convention, and I'm sure that there must be something once you experience it that makes it that much more valuable, but I've been moved and inspired by just watching the conventions on television for my entire life, and I admire all the people who put so much effort into running for these delegate positions, but I just don't understand the passion for which people feel like they need to attend the convention. I'm not dismissing it. I just don't get it.
It is, and I don't know, Tim and Bernita, y'all may have been to them, but I know I've been to one, and it's akin to going to a live sporting event or seeing it on TV. I mean, if it's a great game, it's a great game. But then if it is a great game and you're there live, you do feed off the energy of the crowd, and it does add a little something extra. But I do think it's good that folks get to go to one or two in their lifetime, not necessarily the same folks keeping every spot. I mean, that was one of the things I felt. I went last time. I got to go. I was lucky to be a page. I don't need to go this time. I mean, not that I won't say I'll never want to go again, but let a little rotation happen, you know, new folks.
Well, the basketball, college basketball did that with the Final Four. They used to do it in 20,000-seat arenas, and now they do it in domed arenas. And I've been to two Final Fours because they came to the Phillips Arena, the Georgia Dome, and they have 50,000 people watching a basketball game, and you get to be in there, and you may be far away, but you're still in there.
Bob, go ahead and hold up. I think we have Don Cassidy with us. Don,
yeah, this is Don.
Yes, thank you for calling in, sir. And a little time we got left here on the Kudzu Vine, we just wanted to get a little interview with you and find out about your campaign, because we know it's, you know, the top special election pickup opportunity for Democrats in the country.
Well, thank y'all for inviting me to talk with y'all, and yeah, we're excited down here. We've been running pretty hard for the last 3 months, and we're poised to take this seat over.
Yes. Well, Don, tell us a little bit about your bio.
Well, I was born and raised in a little small town in Louisiana within the district called New Roads, and then went to a Catholic school, then LSU undergrad, and got a graduate degree in psychology, and then went to Georgetown Law School. From there, became a prosecutor, assistant district attorney back in my local parish here, and then became a state representative in the year 2000, and have been a state representative for the past 8 years.
Yes, and we know they have term limits there in Louisiana, so I guess does that give you any more interest in stepping up to the next level, or do you have other motivations for going to Congress?
No, term limits I never really thought about. I mean, there are a lot of opportunities if you want to continue public service here in Louisiana. There's the state senator, he's on the same cycle as I am, and that would be a natural idea if term limits was an issue. But no, I mean, this was just a way to better serve my area, my district, and I thought it would, gave us a good opportunity to serve the state and the country as well.
Yes, and what are some of the key issues you're running on?
Well, the issues when we've been talking to people, it's a very grassroots-oriented campaign. Although it's a truncated period, we've gone around the district and tried to meet with people and talk about the issues that affect them. And those are the issues that the economic bread and butter issues that people are struggling with. The price of gas, the cost of health insurance, and so those are the issues that we've been focusing on, trying to talk about bringing some common sense solutions to these problems, to actually address these problems in a nonpartisan type fashion, and hopefully solve some of these pressing issues that people are struggling with on a daily basis.
Yes, and so this is apparently a two-part campaign. Kind of tell us how that works.
Well, yes, we had a primary system that have four other candidates in the Democratic primary and three in the Republican side, and we were able to successfully navigate through there through the two primaries. It was actually a primary and then a primary runoff. In Louisiana, in the primary system, you have to get a majority of the electorate as opposed to just a plurality. So we were able to get through the first primary and then the primary runoff, and now we're 2 weeks away from May 3rd, which is the general election against the Republican Woody Jenkins.
Yes, so you've already won twice. You're looking for one more win to go to Congress.
Yes, sir.
That's exciting. Well, on your website, doncashew.org, you have a very prominent thing talking about Don's Tips for Parents. Tell us about that initiative.
Well, that's as a prosecutor, I've dealt with children who have been subjected to sexual abuse, and so I became very interested in that in my legislative career, and passed we helped pass and helped write actually a tough new internet predator law, which actually allowed prosecutors to prosecute sexual predators for soliciting minors. It used, before that law, the predator would actually have to have some physical contact with the minor after engaging in discussions over the internet and luring them into that contact. So this gave law enforcement officials a significant tool to allow them to stop that physical contact, and prosecute these people for soliciting the minors. So as part of this campaign, we have tried to educate parents on what they should be watching out for with their children in their activities over the internet. Basically, just to make sure that the children keep their keep the computer in a busy family type room as opposed to the bedroom. The prosecutors and law enforcement people tell us that most children who have been victims of these online solicitations had their computer in the bedroom. So we gave them those basic tips and just some other tips to for parents to be aware of in watching their children's online activity.
Yes. Well, it seems like in the last few weeks, every time, whether it be you look at a blog or one of the Washington Insider publications or just your website, you hear more good news coming out of your campaign and be endorsed by this. Republicans are fearful of this. RNC's running for their life, all these kind of things. What things in your campaign have you been the most excited about?
Well, to follow up on that thought, we have the Washington Republicans are coming after us. Freedom Watch is coming after us. There's a anti-union guy that's getting ready to do some serious third-party expenditures against us. So, you know, we are under siege over here. And, the exciting thing is that, you know, we've had a tremendous response from the constituency here in Louisiana, both from a verbal response to a financial response. We've raised over $1 million in 3 months, and it's going to take probably another $500,000 to defend ourselves in the next 2 weeks. So we still have a challenge before us, but a lot of people are stepping up to try to help defend ourselves and to help take this seat.
Yes, well, that is quite exciting. Well, if you want to leave everybody with ways they can help you between now and the election, let the folks know that.
Well, I think the best way would be to go to our website, doncasu.org, and there are various ways you can either volunteer, or if you're not from here or you can't get here to volunteer, you can give us a contribution through the website. There is a link on the website which allows you to do that.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for being on with us, and just keep up the hard campaigning.
Well, great. Thank y'all for y'all good work. Take care.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yes, well, I was glad Don could come on in before the end of the show, and that is quite an exciting campaign for folks that haven't been following it, but Ryan can keep you abreast of it on Daily Kingfish. You can find about it other places, but I tell you what, if we wake up on May 4th and we find out that, Don Casu, Travis Childers, they've been both elected to Congress, that is just going to be an absolute signal that there's a change in the country and in the South to move back towards more common sense, middle-of-the-road politicians. Well, we're actually after 8, but, the show podcast, that's where most of the folks listen to us. So I thought I'd just go on a little over it, if everybody's okay. But I think it's been a nice first anniversary show, and hopefully we can look towards another year of exciting political talk. Catherine, Bernita, anything on y'all's minds from the week ahead?
No, I'm just going to try to relax this week.
12 hours at the Teamsters Hall.
Yeah.
Bernita, what you got on your horizon?
I'm with Catherine, just trying to relax this week.
Yes, well,
the week after with qualifying.
Yes, I know, because with the qualifying, we got to keep abreast of all that to send that to the people. And then, Tim, anything on your mind?
Yeah, one thing, David, before we go. When you came to me with this idea for this podcast, I thought, man, he's flipped. He's crazy. I want you to know I still think you're crazy, but in a good way. Congratulations on a great first year, buddy.
Oh, well, you all deserve it. It's not just me. It wouldn't be much of a show with just me. It wouldn't have near the listeners. I don't know who would have listened, but it takes us all. And but like I said, I can't wait to have another year, especially as the even election year heats up. I think that's going to be a real plus for our show, and as we expand throughout the South. Next week should be exciting. I'll give y'all a report from the Hawks game. I'm going to do something you couldn't have done for a decade now, and that's attend a Hawks home playoff game. Be doing that Saturday, so I'll be fresh off of that the next day. So hopefully it'll be a good time. And like I said, it's going to be a heavy North Carolina show next week, but still some Georgia action as well. And look to see y'all all next week.
And I'll give you a report on the Bruce Springsteen concert.
Excellent. Do that.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye. Good night. Thanks. Bye.